Chapter 24. Nicky, Mondello. Bloody hell. The air blasts me and I stumble at the top of the gangway. I've never known heat like it. I cling to Gio to steady myself. He wraps his arms around me. Nicky, welcome to Sicily. My very beautiful home. You love, yes? If I learn to breathe, sure. With sweat sliding down my neck, I take his hand and, on shaky legs, step from the airplane into the shimmering heat and my exciting new world. After going through customs and collecting our luggage, we step into the car park and some guy yells, "Si veloce!" It's Gio's cousin, and I take this to mean hurry, because Gio grabs our suitcases and throws them into the boot and we jump into his Fiat Panda. As they mould the air with hand gestures, in a language I can't understand, the car tears through the frenzied Palermo roads. The vivid colours that flash by are dazzling, and my head swivels around with each new sight and scent. How can this all be just a few hours away on a plane? It's magical. The car halts, and I jolt forwards, crashing into the hot leather chair in front of me. Gio grunts. "It's car, Jemmy. We be go soon." Angry men thrust fists through open sunroofs, and a few abandon their vehicles. "Pezzo! Pezzo!" they roar through clouds of exhaust fumes. Vespas in all sorts of shades weave in and out of lanes and squeeze around us like a swarm of bees. Not even the honk of the car horns frightens them off. Being used to the rules of the road back home, I grip Gio's hand and hold on. But he's oblivious to it all, and eggs on his cousin through a red light. We're all gonna die, and haven't even been to the beach. Imagine dying Peely Wally in Sicily, with not even a tan. As we leave the city, the traffic calms. The road's narrow, and a mist of fine dust blows against the car windows. Gio offers me a bottle of water. It's grown warm, but I still hold it against my flushed skin. Everything is sticky. My hands, my face. I'd sell my soul for crushed ice.
"Ti prego, ferma la macchina,"
Gio shouts. The car jars to a stop. The force throws me back against the seat and the water bottle escapes to the floor. What now? He jumps out from the car, raises his arms, stretches down to touch his toes and does a little jog on the spot. He grins over to me and rubs his hands.
"Nicky, I know so young, but watch."
He ambles over to the opposite side of the road, taking his t-shirt off as he goes, to where trees are growing in rows. My eyes widen in surprise as he stoops, tenses, then pounces and climbs up a rickety fence. At the top, he totters to and fro. He's going to fall, but he balances, reaches out and grabs some of the branches and their hanging fruit. Placing a few in his t-shirt, he rolls it up, jumps down and runs back.
"Nicky, you no taste the orange like this anywhere else."
I can't believe you just pick them off trees here. I'm not even that fond of fruit. I'd rather have a chocolate or a tub of ice cream. He peels the shiny skin and the tangy scent pierces the air. My mouth waters in response.
"Every time I come home, I stop here. Eat the orange."
He unwraps the last piece of skin and tears the orange in half. The sticky bright juice trickles and dribbles down his fingers. My mouth grows drier and I lick my lips. I want to suck his fingers dry, but I stop myself. It wouldn't be right. Not in front of his cousin.
"But you stole it, Gio." He shakes his head. "Eat the orange grove. 102 they don't miss. Open your mouth and taste."
It explodes in my mouth, the juice oozing out and drenching my dry throat,
The tart sweetness beyond anything I've ever known. Is this how an orange should taste? It's glorious.
Gio smiles, throws one to his cousin, then offers me more.
Andiamo, he says. Off we continue along the dusty road. The cousin turns on some music. Gio gestures wildly. And me? I sit savouring my newfound passion for fruit. As we turn a corner, the landscape shifts to rocky shorelines and rugged mountains. In the distance, a beach, long and curved, slopes gently into a blue and turquoise sea that glitters in the sun. Its pale golden sand is dotted with pastel-shaded cabins. Lime, lemon and pink. It has been etched from my dreams. I jump up and down excitedly, as if I'm five. The beach, Gio! The beach, look!
Bellissima, but too hot. First we see my father. We go later.
Not to worry.
My heart sinks and a slump in the seat. In my excitement, I'd forgotten about that part. I hope he likes me. The noise is fussed. It snakes down the tiled stairway and grows harsher as we approach his father's door. The chittering and chattering, the booming laughter, the clinking and clanking of glass, and the giggles of children smashing around. After scrunching my hands through my hair to puff up my curls that sank in the moist air, I grip Gio's hand. He drops it as soon as the door bursts open, and I lose him to the crowd. As I stand on the threshold, they gather him in, draw him into a tight circle and smother him with hugs and kisses. The children dance around his feet, pawing at his clothes, tugging for attention. I'm not sure if I should step in or wait until they finish their greetings. After all, this is his family, his home, and I'm just a stranger to them all. But then, Gio opens a bottle of Peroni and joins a couple of men on a balcony. Has he forgotten about me, standing here alone? A little girl, about 5 or 6, hair tied up in a cream ribbon and dressed in the sweetest mint dress, bounces towards me. She laughs, points to my hair and says something, but I can't understand her words, so I just smile back. She shouts something across the room to a little boy with thick black hair. He must be 2, maybe 3, and he scuttles over on his knees to join us. They both babble away, and then a third little girl dances over and strokes the silk of my dress. I'm quite the attraction, and they want to show off their new find. Slipping their tiny hands in mine, they gently drag me into the centre of the room. I giggle with nervousness, and they all join in. A volcano of strange phrases erupts around me. They ooze from the luscious lips of the women and spurt forth from the gregarious men. Someone says, hello, but I soon realise that's all the English they know, and a sheen of sweat glistens on my skin. The strangeness of such a different place makes me feel faint. A woman in a lemon strappy dress offers me a glass of white wine. It's so kind of her, and I gulp it down. When I place the empty glass on a table, their stares tell me I've done something wrong. Gio walks in, holding his Peroni, and if we were somewhere else, I'd grab it and drink that too.
Where you been, Nikki?
How dare he? He was the one that left me. I've been here all the time. He introduces me to everyone, all his brothers and cousins, and I nod and smile. There isn't much more I can do. Everyone seems more friendly now. However, it's weird how the men sit at one table playing cards, drinking lager, and the women sit at another, quiet. Maybe it's some kind of tradition.
And this is my father. His name, it is Tony.
Gio doesn't look much like his dad. Tony is much shorter, slighter, and his hair is white. Even his eyes are lighter than Geo's dark, broody brown. But from all the laughter lines etched across his face, he appears kind. Hoping to make a good impression, I offer him my hand, but Tony shakes his head, ignoring first my hand, then me. Then he turns back to his friends. My skin burns scarlet, and it's not from the heat. Geo shouts something in Italian to him, and then a whole bunch of folk join in, except the women. They just carry on with their sewing, as if it's nothing to do with them. His brother, Filippo, edges up to me, his lips torn into a scowl, and he whispers, "Go home." I flinch at his words. I don't tell Gio. What if he bloody agrees? I wander over to the balcony, hoping that the cool breeze will dampen the burn of Filippo's words. But the air's too warm, and the wound too deep for such a simple cure. I forbid my tears to betray me, but still they run. Slowly at first, but then faster, as if they now have permission. Below, on the ground, a girl in denim shorts jumps onto the back of a lilac scooter. She wraps her arms tightly around another girl with long dark hair, and they both laugh as they zip off. They could be going anywhere, but I wish I could join them.
Niki?
Gio kisses me on the head, and with the back of his hand wipes my tears away. My family, they want me marry Italian woman. Not someone like me, then. They no understand. It take time, Niki. My dad, he no the bad man. He sorry. But what about his brother and the rest of the family? They're all bloody ignorant. Why didn't you tell me things would be like this, Gio?
I no know, Niki. I no know. I very sorry. But I love you. That's all it matter.
And I love him. Maybe he's right. And that's all that matters. I let him lead me back into the room. But this time, we go together, hand in hand. Later, from the women's table where I sit silently as the others sew, I glance over at the men with their cards and lager. I want to be a part of their laughter. I can't talk, but at least I could play bloody cards and get drunk. What is this? 1953? A wash of loneliness drenches my skin, and I long for my mum to say, "Hen, do you want a cup of tea?" Maybe I've made a huge mistake.
Chapter 25. Mrs. Hawthorne, Edinburgh. A yellow skip squats on the driveway, an affront to the manicured lawn. We trail back and forth with crates crammed with remnants from the past. We've cleared out cupboards and drawers, stripped curtains from windows, and thrown up rugs from the floor. Sometimes we sit on the garden bench to catch our breath, or to argue over a tin of beans from 1994. Yet still, no letter have I found. "What an utter mess," Charles says. He steps cautiously over stacks of old books. I reply with the same words I've used many times before. "It'll be worth it in the end." Then I add some more to his pile. He's right. Upstairs, which we're redecorating first, is shambolic. But I'm not going to spend another night on a mattress that mourns for their past. I need everything gutted and gone. So out in the skip sprawls the chintz of her middle-class reign, and I can't wait for us to sleep in our new virgin bed. "Let's stop for a cigarette," Charles says, as he rubs his eyes and slumps onto the garden bench. He tends to think of himself as younger than his days, but physical work reminds him of his years. I join him, and we both light up and exhale. The smoke curls into the summer air, its sour scent masking the fresh garden bouquet. Charles coughs. He'd been coughing quite a lot lately. "We really should stop smoking, you know," I say. "Let's get the bedrooms decorated first." My heart dips, and prickles of disappointment sadden my voice. "Don't forget downstairs, Charles. That needs done too." He sighs, throws his cigarette to the floor, stamps it dead, tosses it into the skip and slumps back. It must be hard for him to destroy the memories they shared, but he's promised. It isn't like I'm being horrible or changing things for change's sake. The house is gorgeous, but the decor is decades old and not to my taste. When we make tea, it's Clarissa's kettle we use. When we bake pizza, it's her oven gloves that we wrap our hands in. And what kind of woman has patterned china, like my grandmother once had, and floral aprons with gingham bows? The green leather chair in the living room is torn and shredded by dogs they once had. It was her favourite chair. The book she'd been reading last still lies open and waits there. It's crazy to be envious of a dead woman, but I can't help it. I want to deplete it all. The place is saturated with her. There's no space for our own love to flourish. However, Charles is the kindest man I've ever known. It's cruel to neglect his emotions. He's shown that he loves me in so many ways, and here he is showing me again. I walk over to him, unfold his crossed arms, place them around my thickening waist, and snuggle him in. "Thank you for all this," I say, ashamed of myself and my irrational thinking. He doesn't deserve my jealous behaviour. "You don't need to thank me. I love you and want you to be happy. Excuse me for being a tad grumpy. I'm just tired. It's hard work, all this." I link my arm into his and pull him up. "Come on, old man. Let's get you something to drink." He scratches the top of his head, holds a finger to his chin, then tilts his head. "There's one thing, though." He lets go of my arm and frowns. My eyes narrow and shift to the red gravel I've been shuffling with the toes of my flat, sensible shoes. I'm arranging it carefully into a tall pile. "What's wrong now?" He points behind us. "We're going to need a bigger skip." I laugh, bubbling with joy, and follow him back into the house. The gravel topples silently to the ground behind us. Slashes of purple and ruby rose bruise the night sky, and I burn candles of jasmine and pomegranate to sweeten the shadows stretching through the living room. Around the low coffee table, I scatter piles of cushions on the floor. The scene set, I slip the box behind me. Charles saunters in with a bottle of red wine, Jack padding along at his feet. "What are we doing?" he says as he shuffles down awkwardly. Charles is more comfortable in a formal setting. "Ta-da!" I hold out the box, and he fidgets on the green velvet cushion like a little boy, rubbing his hands together. I bathe in his approval, his excitement warming me. "I'll have you know, I was the Scrabble champion at my old grammar school," he says as he sets out the board and spreads out the letters. "Game on." I'll be hopeless, but I love breaking through Charles's stiff shell and showing him it's okay to have fun. "Dickhead isn't in the dictionary," he sighs. "I think you'll find it is." I add another tile to the end. He pushes his glasses down his face and peers over them to stare. I laugh at his stern expression, made even funnier by his red wine moustache. Try dickheads, then, and that's 20 points to me.
Hardly the best use of language, but I'll give you it.
Grudgingly, he writes the points down on a scrap of paper as I pour a small wine. Like Charles, my father loved games, especially ones he could bet on, like a round of dominoes at the pub. It's cruel they can't meet each other. He'd have been fascinated by Charles's knowledge, entranced by his tales, and rather in awe of his status. I missed out so much in my father's life. All those years wasted, when we didn't talk, didn't see each other. And now, when everything is perfect, his absence is more acute. If only I'd known how much I'd miss him, I may have made better choices. He might have too. Charles is far ahead in points, and the distance is lengthening. I stare at tiles that refuse to form sense and hope he can't play his next move. Jezebel. And my goodness, look, double and triple points.
Jezebel.
That's an old word.
It still has relevance today,
he replies, glancing my way, a smile widening his lips. Does he mean me? I grab a handful of peanuts and throw them towards him. They scatter around his head and fall to the floor. Jack wakes from his slumber and scrambles to snatch them up.
Now, that's not a very sporting way to declare defeat, madam.
I throw some more. They sprinkle around his head and catch in his thick grey hair. He brushes them off and frowns. Have I gone too far? He leaps around the table, grabs me, and pins me to the floor. I squeal in excitement.
That behaviour is rather uncouth,
he says, his face inches from mine. His hands grip my wrists, holding my arms to the ground, and he sits astride me, his breath warm against my skin. My pulse races.
You're such a sore loser.
I'm not, I reply, and he grazes my lips with a kiss. But I love you, he whispers, and brushes the hair away from my eyes. I sigh and drape my arms around him, the Jezebel that I am. We lie there for most of the night, Jack curled at our feet, until the candles burn out and the chill returns. Charles shoos Jack to the garden before he settles for the night, and I make my way up the staircase to get ready for bed. A brown box lies on the second step. Have we missed taking it to the skip?
Charles, there's a box lying here,
I shout. I prod it gingerly with my toes. It isn't sealed, so I peel back a corner to see more. Could it be mine? An Hermes scarf appears in yellow and green, and I pull it out. Something clatters from it onto the wooden step. Something that's been wrapped up carefully inside. I panic, hoping it isn't broken, and step down to pluck it up. Charles pushes me aside and grabs it. A look of anger flashes over his face.
Charles, what is it? You shouldn't have touched that,
he says, and his eyes flush with tears. What is it? I reply, a sudden weakness in my legs.
It's just a framed photograph I wanted to keep. It was in the skip by accident, so I retrieved it. It's nothing. Go to bed. I'll be up soon.
Tears drip down his face.
Why? But you've lots of photographs.
They're all over the house. Show me what's so special. I reply with words braver than I feel. With trembling hands, he turns it around. At first, I'm not sure what it is. Then the lines become clear and the shapes make sense. It's Clarissa, draped along the chaise lounge that still stands at the top of the stairs, her dark long hair fanned around her like Medusa, and apart from the taunting smile she wears, she's naked. An acid taste floods my mouth. Why, Charles? His body shakes. It's crushing to witness his pain. I want to run and comfort him, but his next words bludgeon my heart. She's my soulmate. I can't. I won't just discard her. He walks away, cradling the photograph as if it's the most precious thing he owns. On trembling legs, I walk into the bathroom and hunch over, vomit into the sink, the avocado sink, the one she'd chosen. I stare into the mirror, the silver mirror she once hung on the wall. They must have laughed together and joked about the right height. I see the lines, the wrinkles, the saggy skin. The eyes once bright and turquoise blue that sparkled with devilment, now dull with age. How can I compete? If only he'd seen me younger, I might have had a chance then. I turn on the taps, gold ones, of course, because she wouldn't have settled for less. I run my hands under the water, letting it get hotter. Music drifts in through an open window. He must have retreated to the garden and his summer house. I recognize the song. It's the one he played at her funeral. The most beautiful girl in the world. Damn you both! I scream and slump to a heap on the floor. The ghost of her laughter echoes around tiled walls.
Chapter 26. Ronnie, Liverpool.
Skirts.
Yes, miss.
I flick a glance back.
Girls. Oh, miss.
I laugh and enter the lime green corridor of the humanities block for my appointment with Edward, a business teacher. I'd observed his lesson yesterday, and today is feedback. He's not going to take it well. He never does. It's as if he ignores my advice to taunt me. He greets me with a smile, arms crossed over his chest. I sit down opposite him and take out my folder.
Morning, sir. So, how do you think it went?
He's rigid in his chair and a sneer paints his face.
It went great.
But some of the children couldn't keep up, I say. He cocks his head to the side, narrows his eyes, and slides his chair further back. I brush a crumb from the desk. Massaging his temples as if I'm a headache he wants to banish, he grunts. Most of them did okay. But that isn't good enough, is it? I'm sick of his attitude. He leaps from his chair and bangs a fist on the desk. Sweat soaks through his armpits, and spit dribbles from his lips.
This is rubbish. They did all the work.
He stamps his feet.
I'm not doing anything else. I'm being persecuted.
Why don't you take a seat, sir? Let's talk about this calmly.
Take a seat!
He shouts, and he grabs a chair. It slams against the back wall and crashes to the floor. He's behaving the same way as the children he's meant to help. What a role model. I want to seize him by the throat, but he'd love that ammunition.
We'll leave this for today, sir. You need to settle down.
I stride out, throw a nod to the receptionist,
It'll be 5 minutes. And march into the car park. Crouch behind a huge truck. I roar, "Fucking bastard!" I close my office door and slump into the soft leather chair with my chips and cheese. The room will reek of grease for the rest of the day. So annoying that staff will know what I've eaten. Nostrils flaring, they'll enter the room and within seconds, pursed lips will sigh, "Oh, is that chips I'm smelling? Fuck off, man. They're not contagious." I delve into the soggy mess, but after a few minutes, bin them. Great. Now the room stinks for nothing. Tom's business card lies on the desk. I've toyed with it throughout the day, coiled and rolled it through my fingers. It isn't as crisp now. I trace the raised lettering with a fingertip. Tom London, expert in family law. Impressive. But I'm not a client. Should I trust him? After all, we'd met under unusual circumstances, but on both occasions he'd been a gentleman. Mum would have liked him. I can just imagine her saying, "Oh, a lawyer, that's a good job. Go on, you stick in there, doll." A memory of Estee Lauder scents the air, and with it a vision of her green smoky eyes, red-stained mouth and platinum curls. Before the cancer stormed and cowed her to her knees, that is. There's a tightness in my chest. I can't go there. But I can dial.
"Well, Ronnie, I didn't expect to hear from you,"
Tom says. I shuffle paper around my desk and pick up a pencil. "If it's inconvenient, Tom, we should talk some other time. I hear there's some dogging planned on a lay-by off the M56. His laughter roars down the line. "You're funny, but I'll pass on that one. Unless you want some company while Graham's off doing his thing. Always happy to come to the aid of a damsel in need." I smile. Graham would go nuts at him using his name. "So how are things in the land of Tom?"
"Sorry, just a minute."
The call goes quiet. I doodle squiggles on paper. Boxes that get bigger and bigger, and tiny little flowers. I keep an eye on the door. The piece can be shattered in a matter of minutes.
"Sorry, Ronnie. Problem with a client. Are you still there?"
He'd taken his time. "Sure, I'm here, but I've not got long."
"Oh, great. I was worried you'd be gone."
A clicking snaps down the line. My body tenses. What if someone is listening in? "Can you hear clicking?"
"Oh, sorry. I was clicking my biro off and on."
I smile and flop into the chair. "Why did you want me to call?" My red fingernails tap the desk. If he's just after sex, I'll cut this off now. Tom splutters down the phone.
I thought it was pretty obvious. I like you, Ronnie. I like you a lot. I'm not sure what the deal is with Graham, but I'd love to take you out. For dinner, perhaps. Or we could go to the cinema."
"A normal cinema, I hope." He laughs.
Of course. "So, next Saturday at 8?
A student knocks gently on the door. Her parents stand behind her. The mother glances at the clock and the father shifts from foot to foot, obviously antsy. "Great, I'll meet you outside. I have to go. Bye." Graham slips into bed, nuzzles my neck and gives me a quick peck on the cheek.
"Hey, Ronnie, can we talk?"
My stomach churns and I put my book down. This doesn't sound good. I stare at my hands, then dart a glance in his direction. "Sure, what's up?"
"It's just, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way. I appreciate everything you do. You know that. No one has ever done the things you've done for me before."
I shift around in the bed. It's so hot, I can't get comfortable. Is he finishing things? Oh, come on, Graham. Spit it fucking out. For all his sexual shenanigans, he's prim and proper in his language. He stares at me and raises a brow. Does he believe I give a fuck? I clench my fists and dig my nails into my palms. The swinging in sex clubs are great, Ronnie. But, well. But what, Graham? I snap. He turns his head away and picks up the teddy bear he bought me in Paris. It holds a red velvet heart. There are others on the stall with Je t'aime scrawled across them, but this one is blank. I still love it. He tosses it back and forth in his palms. It's like I'm a dog on a leash, Ronnie. Like that guy you told me about at the sex club. Remember him? I throw the duvet off and pounce towards him. I'm inches from his face. A dog on a leash? What the fuck are you talking about? You can do anything you want. He swallows and lowers his head. I want to punch him so badly, but force my arms to stay at my side. Don't you get everything you want? At least he has the decency to nod. Then what's the problem? Tears trickle down his cheeks. Why the fuck is he crying? Surely it should be me.
You're always there. Always watching, judging, humouring me like I'm 5 years old.
I thump the pillow with a fist and glare at his pathetic cabaret. I'll let you do anything you want. Anything! I shout. He lifts a tissue to his nose and blows.
That's it. You let me.
I tense from the pain. He leans over and gently takes my hand. I jerk mine away. My book has fallen to the floor. I bend to retrieve it. I'm going to pack my bags and go home and read it.
I miss the chase. I miss going out with my mate.
What a selfish bastard. He's had all the sex he could want. I'm sick to death of men, tired of their wants. Graham continues.
I'm sorry. I'm not normal. I know you deserve more.
I do! I scream and throw the book at his scum-ridden back. He doesn't react, just picks it up and hands it back.
It's not your fault.
I fucking know it's not.
It's all this religious stuff. I've missed out. I don't want to be like this. Honest, I don't. I feel like shit. Don't leave me, please. If I don't have you, I don't know what I'll do.
He crumples into a heap, and his body shudders as he weeps. He looks over, eyes stained with tears.
I didn't want to lie to you, Ronnie. But now, look what I've done with my honesty.
I stroke my arms and leave him to weep. I've spent so much time on this piece of shit.
Ronnie.
Yes?
I've never felt like this for anyone. Give me a little bit more freedom for a while. It's only sex. It means nothing at all. Then, when it's all out of my system, I promise I'll give it all up. It'll be like Paris forever. Just you and me. Just us.
I twirl a strand of hair through my fingers and tap my feet on the floor. So, he's not rejecting me. He's begging me to stay. He must love me, but be afraid to commit. Is there any difference, really, to him chasing women with his mate? At least I'll not have to watch or jeopardise my work. And it's not his fault that he wants to live like a teenager when he was denied it growing up. He shortens the distance between us.
Please, Ronnie, I need you.
He puts the teddy bear in my hands. But are we back to step one? Is Graham right? Do I deserve much more? Could that person be Tom? I shake my head. That's silly. Tom's merely a weapon and part of the plan.
Ronnie?
Graham cries. I wrap my arms around him and cradle him in. Stroke his hair gently. There's a part of me that wants to rip it all out, but I don't. Graham, it's okay. I understand. You go out with your mate. Make it next Saturday. I'll see you Sunday for lunch. But you're buying. He mutters.
Thanks.
I smile. Tit for tat. Fucker. Chapter 27. Nicky. Mondello. Sliding my feet into sandals, I sneak across the room. It isn't easy with flip-flops slapping against tiles, but thankfully Gio stays snoring. When I edge the bedroom door open, sunlight streaks through. I creep into the gap and close it to seal him in the dark. This is my day, my moment. I unlock the balcony doors of our sixth floor apartment. We've been here a few weeks. Gio said it's a dangerous place, but it's not any worse than Edinburgh. He's just jealous of all the wolf whistles I get and is being overprotective. The heat blasts my face. It's unrelenting, even at 8 in the morning, as is the noise. Everywhere you look, something is happening. Women drape clothes over makeshift ropes. Some, on their knees, scrub walls and windows, while others fling buckets of water over bright orange railings to splash onto the road. Voices boom back and forth as hands spin through the air and the mixture of onions and garlic tingles my nose. I look down to the balcony floor. The wicker basket lies on its side. It must have fallen from the table during the night. I wince when the heat from the handle burns and I unravel the rope. Now it's time for the fun part. The little green van is below us and young boys are running around with orders. Placing the money inside the basket, I raise it over the side. Sweat is stinging my eyes, but I can't let go of the rope to wipe them. Someone laughs and points and others join in. I smile back, feeling a part of something. The basket is swinging from side to side, but it's hard to weave the rope through my wet fingers. As long as it gets there, that's fine. Once it's lowered with all the rest, I watch and wait, hoping for the best. I can't speak the language, and have no idea about Italian money. Gio buys everything, but today, I want to do it myself. When I told my mum about it, she was horrified and wrote back, "That is so lazy. Why don't they just go down to the van and get it? And what if someone steals the money, hen?" She doesn't understand the intensity of this heat. "And you'll get fat eating pizza for breakfast. Do they not have frosties or porridge?" The rope sways and I tug to check the wheat. It's heavier. I squeal and roll up the rope. I've done it. Okay, I hadn't needed to talk, but at least it's something. I'm learning my way. The sfincione is still warm. It's like fried pizza from the chippy, but wrapped in breadcrumbs. It's become my most favourite thing to eat, as it reminds me of home. There are too many fish in Sicily for my grease-loving tongue. Wishing I'd ketchup, I carry it through to the bedroom with a skip in my walk. Wakey, wakey. Gio grumbles and pulls the thin cotton sheet higher to hide from the light. I sit down on the edge of the crumpled bed, tray in hand, and flick off my shoes. Wakey, wakey, Gio. He sighs, rolls over, and wraps his arms around me. The tray teeters on my knees, and I grip it tighter. Gio, look. Look what I've got you. He rubs the heels of his hands over his eyes, stretches, then sits up and frowns. How you do this, Nicky? My brother, he is here?
No, I got it myself.
He narrows his eyes.
And you not fall? Nobody shout you?
I laugh. I'm 18, not 8. Nope, I was fine. Here, try some.
I tear off a chunk, pop it into his mouth, and place the tree between us.
He looks at me with a gleam in his eyes.
You very clever girl, Nikki.
I punch the air. They're delicious, Gio, and now I can buy them myself.
He laughs and rolls me onto his lap.
Not as delicioso as you, my Nikki.
He licks my nose and it tickles. I giggle. Hands slip under my t-shirt, roam up to my breasts and gently tease my nipples. I tremble and kiss him.
He could have waited. The pizza's growing cold.
I grab the beach bag and sling on my sunglasses. I can't wait to jump in the sea and let the waves wash away the sticky sheen coating my skin.
Let's go then. I'm ready.
Joe glances over, looks me up and down, then shakes his head.
You crazy woman. No.
The excitement slips from my face. What have I done wrong? He said we were going swimming.
What is it? Your clothes, Nikki. You look putana.
Putana? What does that mean, Gio? It isn't a good word. He often uses it when losing at cards with his brothers.
But there's nothing wrong with me. I don't even have any makeup on. It's too hot for all that. We not wear the clothes like this here. You go change.
But it's a beach, Gio. I've just got a top and shorts on. It's boiling outside. He stands and claws his hands through his hair.
You change or we no go.
He snaps. I bite my lip and swallows a lump in my throat.
Siciliano wife, she no dress this way. You bring the shame to my family like this.
I throw the beach bag at him and it hits him on the head. Good. Then I run through to the bedroom and bust into tears. I hate this country and I'm sick of all the rules. The shorts aren't even showing any ass. They're down to the top of my knees and my boobs are covered.
Okay. Maybe my cleavage is showing. But it's 40 degrees and other women walk about in bikini tops and jeans.
Gio has changed. It's all rules, rules, rules. Back in Scotland, he didn't care about any of this crap. I crunch my teeth together. I'm not putting the damn dress on. It has no shape. It's too big for me and reaches my ankles. I'll be like a bloody nun. A drab one at that. And I'll swelter on the beach. Everyone will laugh. A big black beastie crawls along the floor and I clamp a hand over my mouth to stifle a scream. I'm not giving Gio the satisfaction of being my hero. I jump onto the bed and pull my feet up tight to my chest and stare at it until it disappears. The buzz of the town drifts through the window and stings the thick silence. People are having fun, and I can't even read a book or watch television. Nothing's in English. I stifle a yawn and reach for my box of stationery. Dear Mum, I miss you. I miss everyone. Tell Granny and Grandad I love them. It is so hot here. Your clothes stick to you, even when you've just had a shower. And you should see the size of the beasties. They are so massive. You'd hate it. But it is really lovely at the beach. It is like something you would see in a film. Long golden sands and a turquoise sea. When you swim, you can see the fishes. Can you imagine that? I am having a good time. Giovanni is looking after me and his family are all so very nice. So you do not have to worry about me. I hope you and your pals have a nice time at the pub on Saturday at the talent contest. If Granny goes, make sure she does not get too drunk or Grandad will not be happy. Remember that time at Saturday Mass when she was getting communion and was sick all over the priest. Grandad was so embarrassed. But Granny just said she had food poisoning. I do not think anybody believed her, because they had all been in the pub with her. So funny. Anyway, I better go, because Giovanni is waiting to take me out for a drive. It is so hot here that it is brilliant to get a breeze through your hair. I will write soon. Love you always, Nikki. P.S. Please write back. P.P.S. Make it soon. There's nothing in English to read here. A tear drops onto the paper, blotting the blue ink. It spreads when I try to brush it off, but it'll be fine. I can't waste paper and start again. I slide it into a pink envelope and look for a stamp. I've only a few left. Joe hasn't taken me back for more yet. He shuffles in and stands before me with drooped shoulders.
Nikki, we go beach. You put dress on.
No. He walks over, sits beside me and holds my hand. I let him. But after a few seconds of moody silence, I pull it away.
Nikki, this is not Scotland. You have to do things the family way.
I stand and glare at him.
I'm not wearing that minging dress, Gio. If you love it so much, you wear it.
He throws his head back and laughs.
Nikki, you are crazy, Scottish woman.
He slaps his hand against his brow and paces the room. I turn and stare out the window.
Why, you no wear the dress over the shorts? Then, at beach, you take dress off. Problemo solved.
A bead of sweat drips down my cheek. He walks over and rubs it away. Instantly, another appears. It's hard to breathe in this place. Just until we get to the beach, yeah? His eyes crinkle, knowing he's won.
Sì, bella.
I hope he's telling the truth.
Chapter 28. Mrs. Hawthorne, Edinburgh. On bended knee, he gazes up, a red velvet box cradled in his open hands. What on earth? The box is far too large for such a small delicacy as an engagement ring. He coughs and clears his throat, and I nudge closer to the edge of the sofa. I want to hear every word. I also crave a cigarette in my hand.
Please forgive me for my poor behaviour. I've realised I'm quite a broken man. Although I was prepared for Clarissa's death, it's obviously affected me far more than I thought.
I shake my head and place my hand on his knee.
Charles, it's fine, honestly. Do get up, please.
He brushes me away.
No, please let me finish. I've something to say.
At least sit up on the sofa, Charles. You'll hurt your knees down there. The velvet box shakes in his hand.
No, it has to be done this way.
He smiles. Sunlight streaks through the window and brings the teal in the sofa to life. The silver cabinet that adorns the back wall sparkles with trinkets we've collected on our little trips and walks. The room is so warm now.
I never thought I'd have to start all over again. I was just waiting for Jack to die. Then I was going to join him. But that life is the past. You showed me how to feel again, how to laugh and even dance. I owe you my life.
A tear slips down his cheek, and it's hard not to lean over and brush it dry. The words, "Please let this be it," echo like a mantra inside my mind. I was in a very dark place, with nowhere to turn. But then, one day you sat by my side, and little by little, the light crept back. Marry me, and let's make every day as bright as the first. His words, so beautiful in their simplicity, calm my fears. I am here, alive, and not some imaginary ghost of times gone by. My eyes brim with tears. I kneel beside him and cradle his face in my palms. With one hand on the sofa, he pulls himself up from his knees. There's one more surprise. He walks over and opens the sitting room door. Jack bounds in, tail wagging. He's wearing a red bow, and around his collar is a garland of paper roses. He's so pleased with himself as he runs round and round in circles.
Jack, come here. Settle down.
Jack barks excitedly, and Charles dawdles after him. I laugh when Jack's floppy ears peek from beneath the coffee table. Charles sneaks under, grabs his collar, and makes him sit down. Then he tugs his shirt back into his trousers and straightens Jack's bow tie. Settled, they both look up at me with wide eyes, gentle cornflower blue and forlorn molten brown. Charles smiles.
So, will you marry us?
How could I not? If younger, I'd spring towards him and jump into his lap. But creaking bones and sore knees make the journey muted and longer. The decades, thieves of spontaneity. Yes, yes, I'd love to. Charles's smile spreads to crinkle his eyes, and Jack's fluffy tail thumps hard against the floor. My heart echoes the beat, and we cuddle while Jack scrambles between us, licking at our faces as we dissolve into giggles. Charles says, as he regains his decorum,
"This calls for champagne."
Jack pitter-patters beside him, through to the newly painted kitchen. He loves the chance of a treat just as much as me. I stand and search the room for the red velvet box. It's so like Charles to get just about everything right. Not under the table, not hidden behind the silver scatter cushions. Where is it? Perhaps he'll serve it with drinks. Not wishing to ruin his theatrical reveal, I sit back on the sofa and tug at the skin around my thumb. Will he remember emeralds are my favourite? He walks back in carrying crystal flutes and ice-cold Dom Perignon. After throwing a bone to Jack to keep him busy, he raises a toast to us all.
To you, me, and Jack.
He smiles. With my fingers clasped around the stem of my glass, I smile back full of delight, not quite believing my good fortune and this wonderful sight. It will be an honour to be his new wife. But then, my bare finger glares a warning. I wriggle my fingers in his direction. Surely he'll realise his omission.
It's rather lovely, isn't it? Not too sharp,
he replies. I flex my fingers out. There's something missing? His eyes snap to Jack, always his first priority, which, to be honest, has become a tad annoying. Then they turn slowly to me. He looks at my hand, at the flute I'm holding, and jerks to attention.
Oh, how very remiss of me. So sorry.
He grabs the bottle from the table and refills my glass. I slump to the sofa and sigh. Oh, Charles. His face screws up in confusion. The lines that carve his face deepen, and he shrugs.
What? What am I missing?
In an attempt to brighten my disappointment, I gulp some champagne, but the bubbles slip down the wrong way, and I choke on my feelings. just once in my life. Couldn't everything be perfect? He springs over and pats my back. It adds to my annoyance, and I snap, "The ring. Isn't there a ring, Charles?" He flinches at the tone, and I wish it had been kinder.
"Oh, of course. I forgot it amongst all the excitement. I'll rectify that right now."
His hand scratches through his white hair, and he looks around.
"Now, where did I put that box?"
And down he goes on his hands and knees to search the floor. Jack, alert to the tension and some unexpected fun, scampers over, barking to help with the game. Charles tuts and hushes him away, intent on finding the misplaced treasure. I sip champagne, my fingers tapping against the arm of the sofa.
"Aha! It's here,"
he says triumphantly, and drags it from under the sofa. Dust clings to the velvet box as if it's been missing for years and not minutes. But it doesn't tarnish its beauty or the promise of what lies within it. Charles's eyes twinkle. This is the moment. Until Jack barks and the doorbell shrieks along the hall to pierce my heart. The treasure discarded, tucked into his grey cardigan pocket, Charles runs to answer. Voices whisper together, but there's no point straining to hear the words. I'm not interested. Not now.
"It's Robert,"
Charles says as he ushers him in to stand before me. Neither is embarrassed at this unannounced visit. It's as though his friend has every right to intrude on our biggest moment. I nod, smile, and refill my glass with champagne. Robert fidgets with his tie, tightening it, then smoothing it down his shirt to lie flat.
"I hope I haven't interrupted anything."
"No, not at all," declares Charles. With a smile and a nervous hop-skip to the sofa, he sits down.
"Would you care for some champagne?"
Robert unbuttons his tweed jacket, ruches up his chinos, and perches on the edge of a chair. His glasses slip down on his nose, and he peers over them.
"Are we celebrating?"
Yes. I suspect you could say we are," Charles says.
"Oh, well, if I could just have tea, please. It's a bit early for me."
How dare he dampen my occasion with his humdrum milky concoction. Next, the ginger nuts will be out, and the tedious display of intelligence translated in a witty way. Why can't he get out and leave us be? I like him, but he's in the way. I've waited so long for the perfect moment, but like everything else, it's in danger of being shattered. The first wedding had been a mistake. I'd known all along. Everyone had told me, but I'd never listened to them before. Always thought I knew best. Why would I have listened to them then, when there was a beautiful white dress? But I should have paid heed to their concerns. I know that now, of course, long after it's too late.
"So, what are we celebrating?"
Robert says, dipping his biscuit in his tea. He probably imagines it's a new journal publication or some sought after tickets to the theatre. I smile, letting Charles answer. His response will be insightful. With a gulp of champagne, Charles pauses in the moment. Then he lowers his hand to pet Jack. His glance focused on the trail his fingers leave as they weave through Jack's curly white hair.
"I've just proposed."
Robert leaps from his chair and claps like he's giving Charles a standing ovation.
"Such wonderful news! Congratulations!"
It's all the encouragement Charles needs to lift his head and smile.
"Thanks. We're very happy. So, May I see the ring? When I get home, Elizabeth will want every detail. Perhaps I could take a picture.
Charles was about to present it. I blurt, unable to wait any longer. It doesn't matter that Robert is here. He's his oldest friend, after all, and we at least had enjoyed our proposal in private. Charles scrapes his hand through his hair and tucks it behind his ear. A crimson flush bleeds across Robert's face.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm in the way.
Not at all, I say, not wishing further delays. Charles passes me the box from his cardigan. I smile, stroke the red velvet, and the men stand side by side, waiting for my reaction. I press the delicate silver button and raise the lid. Not one ring, but five. I don't understand. Eyebrows raised, I glance up at Charles. He's wearing a smile that almost makes him shine. But Robert is grim and won't meet my eyes.
If you would like me to buy you one, I will. But these were Clarissa's. They cost a fortune and she won't wear them anymore. There's an emerald there. It's your favourite stone. But have them all.
Robert groans.
Oh, Charles.
A week before, I'd asked Charles to buy me a bar of chocolate at the shop. He had asked what kind, but I'd said to grab anything, forgetting to say not to get me anything with nuts. When he returned, he laid seven different bars in front of me. I'd laughed and asked him why, and he'd explained that he wanted to ensure I'd something I really liked that was precious to me. But this? What is this? Does he not understand the connotations?
What's wrong? If you want a new one, throw these away or gift them.
Poor Charles. He loves me. Of that I'm certain. Of course it would be silly to spend money when this lay abundant. I can't hurt him this way or be selfish. I stand and kiss his cheek. No, I love them. Thank you. The emerald is gorgeous. My throat tightens from the tears I hold back and the loss of my perfect moment. But my restraint allows the tension in the room to dissipate, and I'm sure that her laughter, which reverberates around us, is simply my imagination.
I think I'll have that champagne.
Robert smiles, but he never does take a photo.